Hello and welcome to Draw, Lose or Draw, a weekly podcast covering all things Partick Thistle. Joining me today on episode 201, Rhys Haldane. Rhys, how are you?
I'm good, Matt. Thanks very much. I guess a little bit deflated just with the news that came out today regarding Lawless, but I'm sure we'll touch on it at some point. A bit devastating for sort of the season that lies ahead, but no, I'm good regardless.
Jamie McDonald's here. Jamie, how are you?
Yeah, I'm similar. Has gotten obviously to lose Stevie Lawless the rest of this season, and what looks like it'll be about half of next season as well. Obviously, it's a bit of a blow to the confidence and the mood. But yeah, I'm good. I'm good regardless.
And rounding off our panel, an unchanged panel this week, David Forrest. David, how are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. Just coming off WrestleMania weekend on the come down from the showcase of the Immortals. But yeah, obviously the news that came out today was not great, and you know the game was pretty rubbish as well. But you know, I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Obviously, we send our best to Stevie Lawless for a quick and as painless a recovery as possible. And we'll touch on that a little bit later. But David, we'll try and lift the mood. We mentioned last week about where you might be going in Dunfermline. How was your brig chippy on Saturday?
Oh, it was absolutely fantastic. I went with Kieran and Dave McCluskey. And yeah, no, it was absolutely fantastic. I mean, it would have been better if when we turned up at 1 o'clock, Kieran had told us that it opened at 4, because he knew that before we went. And he went, oh, yeah, I knew it opened at 4. And I'm like, well, why the fuck are we here then? But no, it was great stuff. And yeah, we had a couple of pints in Dunfermline as well. But, you know, a jovial one, but not full of mischief or anything, you know, a couple of pints, that was it. But no, it was a good day out.
A responsible travel, Jags. I ended up in Doom pre-match, an Indian restaurant, and it's just like one menu, and it's a 7-course taster menu, and you get sort of 6 small dishes, and then you pick a main. And it was sensational. Everything was different. You know, I had a couple of meat starters, a couple of meat free, and then I got a fish curry, and my mum got a goat curry. I'd never tried goat before, and it was sensational. I think I'll be back there next season. So Doom, one for the away day places to go. The starting 11 then, Kerr McEnroy came in for Ben Stanway, and the only change, Jamie, were you quite content when you saw that team on Saturday? Anything else you think could have been tweaked?
No, I was happy with that team, to be honest. I think I'd mentioned on last week's pod that when you asked did I expect any changes, I said the only one I'd expect would be McEnroy coming back in if he was fit, and then that's what it turned out to be. So I was pleased with that lineup. I didn't think there was any need to change it after 3 straight wins, and obviously we won with it last week. There wasn't really any need for wholesale changes. McEnroy had done well at Arbroath, I felt, so I can see why he brought him back in. I don't think Stanway was terrible against Inverness or anything, but I was expecting McEnroy to regain his place, and the rest of the team was, yeah, as I expected. So I was happy with it when I saw it.
Rhys, you mentioned last week how much you enjoyed listening to Brian Graham get stuck in a little bit to Tam Aware and a chat he had with David. One of the things he got stuck into him about was a game out of Broth where Graham asked Aware to take the wind in the first half and he didn't. And that was a game we lost. Graham turned the teams around at kickoff on Saturday, so we had the wind for the first half. How much do you think that played an effect, not only on our first half and going ahead at halftime, but the game as a whole, because it did turn into a bit of a game of two halves?
Oh, certainly it did play an impact. You look at the game, the first half we were so dominant, and at first I didn't really notice it too much. Obviously I knew it was windy beforehand, but when you're in the ground you kind of almost forget because you're sort of in the stands. But then you notice it at the corners, the ball's moving when Fitzy's trying to put it down the spot, and you look at the corner flag, it's like almost it's blown away. But that's when you notice it, and obviously like I say, the impact it had, we were so dominant. And I'd probably say it. Dunfermline had their fair share of chances in the second half as well, just where the wind was out. It wasn't exactly the best day for a game of football, but like Jamie said as well, I was pretty happy with the starting lineup as well. I honestly think that McEnroy's pretty underrated, as I know a lot of people think. Well, I don't know if a lot of people, but I know there is people out there that don't think he's too great, or they think he's it would be a big miss. But to be honest, I'd be pretty gutted if we didn't sign him on a permanent. I think he's been really good for us this season. Of course, there's been games where he's been off the boil. You're not going to be great every week, but I think he's so important to how we play. He's such a creative spark for the middle of the park. You don't really get a player who's willing to sit deep and can change, like, I know he's not changing position, but, you know, change his role in the midfield, but still pop up with goals and assists. So I think he's a massive a part of our team still, and I'd still really like to see him brought in the summer on a permanent. So I was happy to see him in the team, and I thought he had another good game, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought McEnroy played well. David Rees mentioned the conditions there. I thought despite the sort of unfavourable conditions, it was quite an entertaining game. Do you agree with that? How would you sum up what you saw on Saturday?
I would agree. I thought that we were really, really good in the first half. They really struggled to cope with us. Their defence was getting absolutely ran riot. And there was lots of just wee audacious wee flicks and stuff like that. And, you know, defenders getting turned inside out. That it was a very, very aesthetically pleasing game to watch in the first half. You're right about the, you know, the change, you know, changing the ends and the wind. I definitely think that, you know, Dunfermline literally got the wind behind their sails in the second one, and they came back into it. Probably should have been cleared out of sight, because I thought that we just had Dunfermline on toast in the first half. As Dunfermline kind of grew confidence and grew back into the game, we wilted a bit, and I don't think the conditions helped with that. The penalty, I'm not going to lie, Matt, I can't pretend to have the most accurate analysis of it, because I had to literally turn to you to say, how are you, as it happened, and turn back round, and they were given a penalty, and you were practically screaming, as was your mum. So I'm not going to comment too much on it, but I think that coming out of the ground, I think a lot of people originally were quite outraged with it, but there was a couple of people outside who were saying it was a penalty. It was just kind of our luck that it happened. And then when it went to one each, they were the side in the ascendancy, and, you know, hitting the post at the death, it was a nervy finish. I thought that we were a value for the win. I thought that we should have won. And I don't think if Dunfermline had got that penalty, they would have got a point out of it. So it was disappointing to lose the 2 points. But I really enjoyed us in the first half. I thought that we were playing with a bit of swagger, which was really good to see.
On the penalty you mentioned, I was practically screaming. I think the reason that I didn't really lose it was because the players on the pitch, you can sometimes tell by the player's reaction if a decision's right or not, and from the stand, from my view, I don't think it looked like a penalty, but nobody really complained. And I think in the replay you can see Muirhead does stand on Chris Kane, and it looks like a dive just the way he goes down, but it's not. I think it's a, in my opinion, I think it's a fair enough decision. Jamie, I don't know if you agree on that, and then just generally, who do you think played well for us on Saturday, and do you agree with David's take that we did deserve to go away with more than just a point?
I think a draw was probably fair on the balance of the game. If you want to use a football cliche's favourite, game of two halves. First half, we were pretty dominant. We had 2 shots cleared off the line. Obviously, we had the goal. We just had more of the ball. We looked more dangerous. Second half, they've hit the post twice. I know we've hit the post in the second half as well. And also, I think they missed a pretty big chance. I'm forgetting his name. Is it Moffa or something? I'm forgetting his name. But the guy they brought on for Chalmers blazed one over the bar, which was a pretty decent chance as well. So I think a draw was probably fair. But I do agree with what David said. If they hadn't the penalty, I actually don't think they were going to score from open play. I think it was just going to be one of those games for them when they just kept coming close but couldn't quite get it. But obviously, they got a penalty. So it's kind of, it's a bit different from that. But who do I think played well? I think, yeah, you mentioned it earlier, McEnroy. I thought he had a good game. I thought the defence stood up pretty well. I thought Milne was getting involved. I thought Macbeth was solid enough again at centre back. And yeah, I thought I don't think we were outstandingly good or anything, but first half it was a good show. In second half, I wouldn't say we were at our best. So I thought a draw was probably a fair result at the end of the day. But on the penalty as well, actually, I forgot to say, at the time I agree with you, Matt. I didn't think it was a penalty at the time. I also thought it was outside the box at the time. The replay showing it wasn't outside the box. From the original Jag Zone highlights, I didn't actually think it was a penalty, but I've seen the zoomed in version. You can see Muirhead does stand in his ankle, so it probably is a foul. I think Kane does kind of over dramatise it a bit, the way he kind of flops to the floor like that. But it is what it is at the end of the day. Those are probably going to get given. But regardless, I thought the referee was still shocking. The amount of times that is Edwards, the left back, did a foul throw, but having like a full foot on the pitch was, mate, that was driving me absolutely insane. The fact that the ref and the linesman didn't spot that once, but the entire stand could.
Don't want to linger on the referee for too long, but I basically don't trust referees who can't kick a match off at 3 o'clock exactly. Like, they turn up 2 or 3 hours before the match, and it's the most basic of duty to kick a match off on time. So whenever a referee, this sounds like, it's so pedantic, but if a referee kicks a match off late, I'm just like, oh, fuck's sake, we've got one. Rishi, you've had your hand up for a while.
That's class, and it's so true as well, man. Like, it's so simple to get on time. It's not a bad trait to have, being late in general. But no, what I was going to say is, I thought Macbeth had another good game. I actually love Macbeth. He's so likeable. But I actually think, like, if he got red carded the weekend, I don't think you could have any complaints. I think he made about 8 or 9 fouls that game, and that's been generous. I think maybe have been more. And to be honest, I thought he was going to get a second yellow at some point, but thankfully he didn't. But I don't think we could have had a complaint if he did at some point. Also, I've been slaughtering the guy every time we played them, but I can't believe Chris Kane scored against us, and he actually was quite influential in the goal here and almost ended up scoring a double. So he's still brutal. And the worst part of it, if you remember, Jamie, I don't know if you heard it, but I got back on the bus and John from the bus is sitting going, I would die for a player like Chris Kane in our team. The guy's got 20 career goals, and there's guys on our bus telling us they would die for Chris Kane in our team. Honest to God, man, that made me sick. Ruined my whole weekend.
Who's the worst player, Reece, that you would die for a 1 year deal?
God honest truth, that I would like to have the worst player that I would take back at Thistle, and I know he's very unpopular for some sections of our support, is Reece Cole, and he's flying this season. He's got another move in him. I could see him playing in an English champ next season, if I'm honest.
Would you die for Reece Cole?
I don't know if I'd die for him. But one guy I'd probably die for is Senna, man. He's so nice, and he also listened to Draw There's a Draw about 400 times on repeat, so great guy. Take Senna back any day.
Likewise. David, anyone you'd die for?
Well, I mean, apart from Effie Ambrose, I mean, it's going to be Effie Ambrose, isn't it? Like, you know, at the very least, he won't do any snidey backflips against us when he scores winners if we sign him. So, yeah, the answer is clear. It's Effie Ambrose. But in terms of, like, Thistle players, or Milan Nitrianski, I'd die for Milan Nitrianski. Get him, run it back, rewind the tapes.
Anyone else stand out for you on Saturday, David?
I mean, I actually thought that Lawless had his best game in a while. I ironically, seen as what happened, but I thought Lawless, again, he was central to a lot of our good play on Saturday, and I really enjoyed him. Graham is, as always, is, you know, just a commanding presence in the team. And looking back, I think it was more that it was a collective in the first half than individual players, if you know what I mean. The second half, when we kind of wilted a little bit, you know, there wasn't too many that were absolutely standing out for me. But I mean, yeah, I really enjoyed Wallace before he got injured, and when he went off, I just knew that that was us, because I felt that a lot of what we were doing pivoted around him, and it was good to see him get back to sort of a bit more form. But obviously that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, I thought that the first half hour, I thought we were really good, actually. And I'm loath to do this. I know I've praised Airdrie, I've praised Morton this season. I really don't like the guy. But James McPake changed their shape after about half an hour. I think they started with a back three and he changed it to a four after about half an hour. And I've sort of questioned on the pod how we set up against back threes this season. I think sometimes against Airdrie, especially early on in the season, and then even recently against, like, sort of Duncan Ferguson's Inverness, we've sort of struggled to break them down. I think we've struggled against back threes, but the first half hour I thought was brilliant, and we were aboard the vibes train that we've been desperate for. I thought for the first half hour we were brilliant and we really should have been out of sight. But I think McPake's little tweak to back four did sort of swing the pendulum in Dunfermline's favour, and obviously then in the second half, as we've mentioned, the wind had an effect as well. So I think that's why I'm probably agreeing with Jamie. I think a point was probably a fair result on Saturday, despite a really quite exciting opening half hour, and then chances in the second half, as you mentioned, Jamie, we did hit the post. The bad news then, Stevie Lawless out until 2025. Jamie, how big a blow is that?
Oh, it's massive, obviously, because he's such an influential player for us. You look at the playoff run last season, Lawless was a key part of that. I think he was involved in a lot of things good about us during that season at times, say especially in the first half of the season. I know Lawless picked up a small injury. I don't know if he's actually ever fully shaken that off or not, but the first half of the season, I thought Lawless was brilliant. I think that Friday night air game when he scored the absolute belter, and he scored another one that night as well. He was absolutely fantastic. There's been a lot of games I think he's been brilliant this season, and his partnership with McMillan in general, I know maybe it hasn't come to fruition as much in the second half of this season, but in general it's so good to watch, and I think that's a huge blow for us. And it's the fact that originally when I saw that he was out for the season, I just assumed it was the rest of the season, that would be it, which was bad enough. But the fact that he's out for like at least half the next season is absolutely gutting. It's such a big blow. And we didn't bring a winger in January now, so we're either going to have to change the shape or play someone out of position, which obviously is not ideal.
Well, Reece, as Jamie mentioned there, that the sort of squad depth is a big issue. Rico Diak sort of been coming off the bench playing there, but do you think Doolan will be forced to change the shape, or can you see anybody else filling in out wide right?
Well, we're our own worst enemy again. We've been asking for another winger to be brought in since July. It's been glaringly obvious that Lawless and Fitzpatrick couldn't go the full season without blowing up, and I'm honest to God, I'm shocked that it's taken this long. They've done well to have remained fit this full time. In terms of what I think will happen, I think we've got to change the shape. We've got two wingers at the club, and one of them is out long term now. So we've got one winger. Doesn't care how you paint it. You know, Diak's a striker, and Xander McKenzie's a central midfielder to trade. So that's your kind of two options you're thinking about playing there, unless you want to tinker things and throw McEnroy out there or throw Robinson out there. And you know, that's going back to the McCall ball days that we used to remember when Turner and Crawford had the shift out there. So I don't know. I'd probably maybe switch to if fitness allows it, I'd like to see O'Reilly brought in some capacity. Maybe see us change to a back three and just go with McMillan and Milne bombing forward in a more wing-back role. You're going to have Robinson and Fitzy just playing off Graham more centrally. But we're going to have to tinker something, because it's not good. Like I say, it's our own fault, to be honest. You could have just went out and got a young boy who's on the fringes at Aberdeen or Hearts or whatever for this happening, and you could have said to me, look, you're not guaranteed to get a game time, but you're not going to get a game time where you are anyway. So it's annoying, it's really frustrating, and it's gotten for Lawless. And to be honest, you're saying early 2025, but I think it could be longer than that. It's a bad one, and it's really disappointing. And I know someone mentioned it earlier, but it could be the last that we see of the McMillan Lawless link up, which is sad to see as well. We could see the last of that. So it's a tough one to take, but we need to just hope for the best. Someone can make themselves a hero. Like, we never expected Fitzpatrick to come in and play Sabanigan last season, so you never know. You can tinker something and somebody might take their chance. So fingers crossed someone's a hero.
You've sort of put your finger on exactly why I'm keeping my fingers crossed for a change of shape, I think, Rhys. I think back to our Broth away game a couple of years ago, when Tiffany was sort of rushed back from injury and he lasted 10 minutes. And McCall put Robbie Crawford on in the wing. And I'm sure there are cases of midfielders on the wing working, but that has put me off it for life. I do not need to see, maybe technically gifted, but slow central midfielder play out wide. I just do not need to see any more of that again. So, yeah, Rhys, I agree. I think a back three could work. We finished with a back three at the weekend. You know, it sort of happened quite naturally with Nielsen slotting back in there next to Macbeth and Muirhead. As you say, O'Reilly hopefully coming back into the fold soon, but yeah, I think Lawless will be a big miss. And just quickly, we've mentioned this a few times this season with the Ngwenya injury and the Adeloy injury of them having to walk off the park. I thought the response on Saturday to Lawless's injury was so slow. I think when he went down, the physio was pretty clear quite quickly that his game was over, and then when he moved him off the pitch, you saw him pretty quickly signal that he needed more help, and nobody really reacted anywhere. And eventually one guy did walk around with, I don't even know what you describe that thing. Jamie, I know you're a Doctor Who fan. It reminded me of in the End of Time when the Master straps the Doctor to that chair thing and then he gets wheeled down the stairs, which Like if that's how we're treating injured players, I think we've got a big problem. The guy who carted Lawless round nearly dropped him twice, and you know, you're sort of loath to criticise like anyone who's sort of there to assist medically, any sort of medical staff, loath to criticise them. But that's a few times now the reaction to pretty serious injuries has been slow and lacking this season, and I sort of think it might need called out or looked at. David, any last thoughts on the Lawless injury and how we might sort of deal with it moving forward?
Well, I mean, I genuinely thought he was in a wheelbarrow for a minute or two until I was advised that he wasn't. It was very odd. And yeah, I think that seeing him try and get him over the divot and nearly dropping him was a bit of a nightmare scenario. But it's a difficult one because on one hand, we don't really have a winger to replace him, and you're again getting back into your McCall ball, Crowbar and random midfielders and the wings. But at the same time as well, like, one of the places we are blessed is in midfield and like centre midfield. You've got four or five players, you know, fighting for a place in that midfield. And maybe it is a case of, well, now if you just go, you know, two bombing wing backs, and then maybe you can add in another midfielder, you can find a place for more of these people that are competing for a place in the squad. And it could work out. Again, you know, it's one of those, it might end up being one of those too many cooks spoils the broth sort of thing, if you pack the midfield too much, then it kind of affects the way that we play. But I'm interested to see how we get round it. I have to agree, though, I think that keeping on with the wingers isn't really a viable solution anymore. I think that what you lose from Fitzpatrick by not having him on the wing is going to be, you know, less detrimental than sticking a guy out on the wing that is not a winger. But I'm intrigued to see how we get round it. And luckily, we hopefully have a couple of games before the playoffs where we can tinker with things, and it's not the end of the world if we, you know, mess a game up, you know, positionally, because we have a bit of a cushion. So we'll see.
Jamie, I'll come to you because we sort of disagreed in our chat earlier about the sort of state of play of the rest of the season. We've got four games to go. We're currently 5 points clear of Airdrie in fourth, but we're eight clear of Dunfermline in fifth. So 8 points in four games to sort of fall out the playoffs. Seems unlikely. Morton, 10 behind with a game in hand as well. And I was sort of making the point that we've not beaten Raith this season. We've still got to play them. And Airdrie as well, who are potential playoff opponents, and the sort of opportunity this presented, and I think I used the term free hits, to sort of experiment with perhaps a new shape and work out a way to beat Raith especially. I know you sort of disagreed and thought that these are still sort of serious games, which of course they are, but you were a bit concerned about how close Airdrie were in the league. How much do you think Doolan will look at these remaining games, and particularly this one that we'll preview now, in Kirkcaldy on Saturday, to experiment, or do you think it'll be sort of business as usual? And what sort of changes can you see Doolan making to the team on Saturday?
I think he will make a change to the shape, probably, like enforced though, due to injury. I think you're right about we won't fall at the top four. I think I was maybe just being a bit overcautious saying that. And I think I mentioned later, I'd forgotten that Airdrie are playing Dunfermline, I think, this Saturday. And I'm not sure if Airdrie or Dunfermline, either of them, have Morton left to play. So yeah, to be honest, it is looking unlikely that we're going to fall out of there. That would also probably require us picking up 0 points in the remaining four games. But I still want us to finish third over fourth. One, I can't be bothered with three fourth place finishes in a row. But two, I'm pretty sure you get us at 75 grand more extra prize money for finishing third. So money's money. It could get added to the budget for next season. So, I mean, I'll take anything. But yeah, I'm not going into that game super confident. I feel, I've said in the chat before, I feel we never ever win at Starks Park. I've never seen us win there. I've been to all the games there in recent years, but I've not seen it. I don't know when last time we won there was. I don't know. I'd have to have someone before my time, I think. But yeah, I'm not super confident going into there. We haven't looked amazing against Raith this season. We chucked, obviously, the game on the opening day of the season. We were 2-0 up through that one. The 4-3 game away wasn't great. And that 1-0 game at home was enough to get football cancelled. So I wouldn't say we've looked fabulous against Raith this season. So, like you said in the chat, we're about, Matt, it's all about like getting good vibes, getting good energy around the place before the playoffs. And around the same time of year that we beat Queen's Park 4-0 at home, and no, I don't think we're going to go there and win 4-0. But if we even went there, and just any win, a 1-0, 2-1 would be a way to a title challenger, would be absolutely massive for the confidence. So I think, I don't think we're going to go there and just field out a random team. I think we are going to go there and really try to win the game and make a statement.
Yeah, Reece, I'll come to you. Jamie mentioned the Queen's Park game, which I think that was another thing we were having a chat about in our group chat. Was it was about a year ago as we record the Queen's Park game, and that was the first time we'd beaten Queen's Park last season. I think Wraith are similar above us in the league. We've not beaten them yet this season. And we were just sort of chatting, like, if we hadn't beaten Queen's Park 4-0 in the regulation season, would we have had the belief to go out and beat them? I think it ended up 8-3 in the playoffs. Probably not. Do you think if we have any sort of chance in the playoffs, we need to pick up a positive result at Starks Park just to install that belief on Saturday?
I'd probably say so. You know, I always say confidence is the most important thing in football. You see it time and time again, like, goals change games, and results leading into games can change games as well. So I definitely think if we go there and, let's just say for talking sake, we play them off the park and come away with a 3-0 win, clean sheet, we've absolutely pumped them. I know myself, I'd go into the playoffs a lot more confident than I am right now, because as it stands, when I look at Rafe's team, I just think it's stacked. It's stacked to the high heavens. They're a bit like us last season in that respect. No, they've got, they just rotate their squad on a weekly basis, and it's always good. And I look at their bench, I'm thinking, how has he been dropped? He's scored in like three of the last four. But like I say, it's like us last season when we had guys like Danny Mullen as the third choice striker. So, and it's the exact opposite for us this season. You know, we're down to the bare bones. I get the weekend there, had seven youth academy graduates in the lineup. We had one guy, one outfield player over the age of 21 on the bench. So we're struggling, and they're the opposite. So I really do think they're a good team, but at the same time, they're there to be got at. And if we're on it, I don't know, we're a match for anybody in this league. We can definitely go and get a result there. So we just need to hope that we're, you know, Dylan gets the team right, and we can figure out how to sort of navigate this Lawless injury. And sooner rather than later, to be honest, because if we start something at the weekend and it clicks, then, you know, you've got, what is it, 4 or 5 games left to sort of implement things. So the sooner the better in terms of getting that position sorted. But I'm not entirely confident, like Jamie says, but a win can certainly change things for the outlook of the season and any potential playoffs.
David, we'll go on to predictions in a second, but the obligatory where's Gooden Kirkcaldy question for you.
Always repping the Duchess. That's a great pub. The pub that looks at somebody's house that's like not far from the ground. I can never remember what it's called. It is a good pub. You cannot get served in it though. That's a problem, because it takes about 45 minutes to get a pint. So I would recommend the Duchess of Kirkcaldy for anybody who is going, because that's a great, great place.
Thanks very much. Kick us off for a prediction then, David.
So much like Jamie and Reece, I'm not too confident. We are kind of skeleton staff at the moment, and having to figure out an entirely new way of playing now that our key threat in the wings is gone for the entire season. Rafe are still going for the title, and it's the same every year. Neither them or Dundee United seem to want to win the bloody thing. So it's an exciting title race that I wish we were in. We've been chronically poor against them for most of the season, and yeah, it's bad. But I don't know. You mentioned obviously the Queen's Park game last year. Like, that was a huge shock to the system. I feel that we're going to go out and have an eye bleedingly bad 1-0 win. Rafe are like kind of going for the title. They need all the momentum they can get. And this feels like not a banana skin, so to speak. I think we're better than a banana skin, but you know what I mean. But this is the championship where everybody loses to everybody. It seems to be the 7 teams lose every week in the championship. So yeah, I don't know. I just feel like this is the sort of chaos element that we like to bring. Teams go for the title and we'll just, I know, fuck it, I'm doing a 1-0 win with the Starks Park booze ringing out as the light starts to die from their eyes as they realise they fucked it and Dundee United are winning the league and they're not going up. So yeah, 1-0 Thistle.
That's obviously insane, but The thing I want to come back to on is, what is one step up from a banana skin? Are we talking like some melon carcass here? I don't know what the sort of slippery qualities are of sort of hollow melon. This is maybe one for football cliches, but what's a step up from a banana skin?
It's a good shit. I'll need to think about that. You've really swung me in that. Although my immediate first thought was like watermelon or melon or something, because watermelon splats and it's all over the place and it's quite big. And okay, because you want a fruit. You know marbles is obviously above, but that's not a fruit. So I'd probably go watermelon on first instinct, but I need to think about it.
Yeah, I can't see it as a taking off in football parlance, but maybe we could be the trendsetters there. Jamie, I'll come to you next. Heather, who is in Italy, sort of swanning about, negating our draws or draw duties, has predicted a 2-2. So we've got David predicting a win and Heather on a 2-2 draw. Do you agree with the sort of what we won't go there and lose consensus, which I'm struggling to get on board with at the moment?
I've been a blind optimist in this prediction league, and I think that's why I've been like stuck in mid-table the whole time. It occasionally pays off, other times it doesn't. I definitely don't think we're going to go there and do a 4-0 Queen's Park like we were talking about that game earlier. Not, I would love to be wrong, but I just cannot see that at all. So I'm going to say we'll win 2-1. I don't back us to keep a clean sheet against Rafe. We failed to do it this season, but you know what, I'm going to say it. We'll win 2-1. We'll win 2-1. I'm sticking with it.
Reese?
I'm going to go Rafe Rovers 1, Partick Thistle 1. We're getting a draw, and it'll put a wee dent in their title hopes. I like to go there and spoil the party, and I'm sure we'll spoil another party on the final day of the season at Tannadice. But no, we can be, what do you call it, the kingmakers this season. So we might not go and win the league ourselves, but we'll definitely have a say in who does. So we'll start that at the weekend where we'll take a point.
I'm going to have to go against the tide here. I do believe that to have success in the playoffs, we will need to beat Wraith. I think that's a fact. I do not think we will beat Wraith, though. I'm going to go 2-0 Wraith. I just don't see good things happening. Bit of admin. Third draw, lose or draw quiz, as teased in the last couple of weeks. It's going to be in Coopers. It is Monday, the 22nd of April, so not too far away. Make sure you get your teams together. All proceeds are going to go to the Partick Thistle Charitable Trust, so it's a very good cause. It's £5 per head. Teams can be up to 6 people in a team. Funny team names, please. And there'll be a raffle as well with lots of great prizes. As usual, if you've been to the last two, it'll be myself and David hosting. David in a sort of floating about MC role, but I believe he'll be partaking in the quiz as well. I've set the questions, so I'll be reading them out and marking. David, you've got your hand up here.
Yeah, I do. I just wanted to get another bit of admin in. I mean, I'm looking forward to the quiz. It'll be great fun. As you say, I enjoy doing the quiz, and it's also me and my wife love doing pub quizzes, so it's always a great excuse to go out and do a quiz. It's going to be a great night, and it'll be good. I look forward to whoever gets what 41 out of 90 and is the winning score. That's what I was going to ask you. Do you want the winning score to be higher or lower?
I always think 70% is a good barometer for a winning score. I think if it's any higher, you've made it too easy.
Yeah, and I'm always of the opinion that the more points the lowest team gets is better, so yeah. Just kind of make it not such an even spread, but I'm looking forward to it. But I just wanted to give a shout out to a man close to all of our hearts, Trenent Juniors Callum Higginbottom,
for
his glorious equaliser against East Kilbride in the Lowland League Cup final at the death yesterday. It took the game to penalties, which East Kilbride then fucked up and lost. So God bless you, Callum Higginbottom. Thank you for your service. Once a Jag, always a Jag.
Superb. Anything that's anti-EKFC has got a place on this podcast, David. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. Lastly, on the sort of quiz setup, David, I have set up, so I think there are very gettable, like low-hanging fruit points, but there are also like very tricky ones where I think you have to look at yourself if you get the correct answer. So yeah, I always aim for about 70% being the winning score, and hopefully we'll achieve that this time. But yeah, please come along. Coopers on Great Western Road on the 22nd, and it will kick off about 8 p.m. So get yourself along to that. I've got the wrong panel assembled to talk about the Masters, don't I? Heather in Italy. She has messaged in to say she thinks Rory's going to win the Masters. And does anyone have any predictions for the greatest week in sport?
I will go purely on vibes. I'll go with Victor Hoyland just because he's sentimental and that he should win. So, you know, is he doing any good? Like,
no, I hate to say it, David. I've been tracking Hovland in the majors for a year or two now, and that he's not in form. He's gone through a bit of a swing change. He's always struggled with short game, and he did improve it for a bit, and then he sacked his short game coach and his short game shit again. And you really need a good short game at Augusta. And by the time you listen to this, the Masters will have teed off. So he might be like three clear while you're listening, and I might be talking shite, but I can't see big things for your boy this week. Although, future majors, David, I think he will win some in his career, but I'm not liking it this week.
Well, you know, good luck to him. Good luck to another brother in metal.
Yeah, obviously we're looking at our boy Spieth, who actually won me a bit of money. I took my mum and Kirsty out for lunch today with my Jordan Spieth winnings, and he had a crazy week, hitting a ball onto the clubhouse roof, hole in one, sevens, finishing the top 10. We like the vibes we're getting off him. I think one of his quotes was he was driving the living piss out of the ball, which we love to hear. Very encouraging. He's got a good Masters record. Other than that, if you're looking for a little bit of value, Cam Young at 45-1. We like the look of that. But it is quite hard to look by Scheffler, I think.
Is Cam Young the Australian guy that won the Open?
No, that's Cam Smith. Cam Smith. Cam Young, I don't believe, has actually won a professional event, which is probably why he's 45-1. He's certainly not won in the PGA Tour, but I like it. I like it this week. Good driver of the golf ball. So we'll revisit that next week when, you know, Cam Young misses the cut and Victor Hovland's won by four, and David, who doesn't watch golf, has sort of made a tit of me, which brings me on to Partridge Thistle this week, which is, do you keep any spreadsheets outside of your work? And actually, I keep a spreadsheet on my golf betting to sort of track it and make sure I don't go insane. I've been keeping this since about the start of 2022, and I'm about £140 up, which I think is probably not a fair reflection into the sort of effort and research I put into the golf betting. That's one of three spreadsheets I keep. But I'll go on to my other two in a minute. David, do you keep any spreadsheets outside of your work?
Funnily enough, no. Well, it's very timely that you mention this, and I would like to put out a plea to anyone on this. So me and my wife love doing the Panini stickers for every tournament. I go buy the stickers, I'll open the packets, and then she'll like sort of put them in order, and then give me them one-to-one to put in the book, and as well as that, she'll mark them on a spreadsheet so we know what we've got and what we've not got. And we keep a spreadsheet for like the World Cup or Euro stickers and stuff like that. And if there is anyone out there in the Draw Loser Draw universe that is doing Euro stickers, please let me know, because I will absolutely be in touch looking for doublers and, you know, try to get rid of my duplicates as well. So, yeah. But no, like your Panini stickers, that's the spreadsheet I usually keep.
Jamie, what about you?
I mean, it's not quite mine, but it's like more a group effort. It's for Champions League fantasy football. One of my friends has been keeping a spreadsheet of the position of the table and who's been top when after every single match day, so we can look at the end when the whole thing's finished and see who was top most regularly throughout it, and if they ended up going on to win, who was in what position, etc. As sad as that is, it's interesting to us. So it's also our own Premier League right now, because it's a three-team title race. I'm one of the three, although I should add that this is only a League of Seven, so make of that what you will.
No, I like that. It's very dull men's club, Cody, Jimmy. It's right up my street. Rhys, any spreadsheets?
Unfortunately not, man. Spreadsheets aren't my area of expertise. I struggle with them as it is at work. But nah, I don't. I quite like a starter too as well, so I might be surprised that I don't have any spreadsheets. But no, unfortunately not. It's just all off the dome.
That's disappointing to hear. So on top of my golf betting one, I've also got the golf tour spreadsheet that I spoke about a couple of weeks ago. And I've also got one that tracks every single Partridge Thistle question, just in case we need that in future, which actually, David, chatting to you about the plans to mark the 5-year anniversary of the pod might come in quite handy. But I'm happy to share those three spreadsheets with anybody who would like to see them. So that'll be a grand total of nobody. If you've made it to the end of episode 201 of Draw, Lose or Draw, make sure you go back and listen to episode 200 if you haven't already. That was released on Monday with Adam from Old Firm Facts and Mary Black. Myself and David caught up with him and played a game of Jag or No Jag, which was huge fun. We hope you enjoyed listening to that. As we mentioned, get yourself along to the Draw, Lose or Draw quiz on the 22nd. We're teaming up with Jags for Good, as we mentioned, and all funds go to the Partick Thistle Charitable Trust. We will be back, as usual, next week to look back on our trip to Kirkcaldy and to preview the league match against Airdrie. In the meantime, stay safe.